Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh is daf Pei Vav, and that will remind you, of course, of one of your favorite bears, which could be something you would be able to use for your siman. But we're holding at the Mishnah. We got Baruch Hashem all the way up to the Mishnah yesterday, and let's just remember where we're holding here in this perek. So we've been talking about how to make an Eruv, where to put the Eruv. And we spoke about what type of home is considered to be a real home and what type of home would be sort of semi-home, like a garage, where if you've got stuff in there that belongs to somebody else, that was the last thing that we discussed, when would that be considered to be really the owner of the house's garage? And when would it be the tenant's garage in terms of requiring a separate Eruv? Now, that related directly, of course, to the issue of where you can put the Eruv, because it came directly from the concept of Beit Shar and so on. Can you put the Eruv in a place that is not normally considered to be a home? And that got us into the issue of whether you would require an Eruv in these semi-homes. Anyway, the last mission in the parak that has to deal with those particular elements of the question is the coming Mishnah, in which we want to decide whether an inhabited home is considered to be a home for Shabbos. Now, we had that, of course, much earlier. We discussed the issue of whether a deer that doesn't have a bialim for Shabbos is considered to be a deer or not. We seem to have come out in the Gemara earlier. It's not really considered to be a deer. However, we made a gezerah, according to Rabbi Meir. We will consider it to be a deerah because of the way in which it's possible for people to get confused between the need for an Eruv with people, even when they would be there in that deerah. And so this Mishnah is going to be discussing the further question. Let's assume that it is a deerah, according to Rabbi Meir. Whether that's a gezerah, whether it's mikra, then it's a deerah. That doesn't really interest us that much over here, which is why Rashi just sort of takes it easy and says Rabbi Meir holds it is considered to be a deerah. It doesn't necessarily have to be a steerah to what Rashi and the Gemara had come out with earlier. And we'll see that there's actually different shitas about how to apply this halacha vis-a-vis a Yisrael or vis-a-vis a goy. And let's start off right away with Haminiach Betuv, Halach Lishbot Be'ir Acheret. So somebody is away for Shabbat, and he went to live in another city. If he went away in another city, so then we don't have to consider the possibility of his coming back for Shabbat, right? So then, nonetheless, if you hold that an unoccupied house is considered to be a home, so then that would be true across the board. So Echad Nochri, the Echad Yisrael, Arezer Oser Divrei Rabbi Meir, and it would be Oser anyway, because again, as we said earlier, Rashi says over here, either he holds it really is a Dira, and the definition of the Rabbanan about what is a Dira when it comes to the issue of Diurin for Erev includes an unoccupied Dira, or we make a gezera to include an unoccupied deer. But for all intents and purposes, you have to view it as the same as any other home. The fact that you left town doesn't change anything. So says Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, no, that's absolutely not true. And it does not oser if you're out of town. It's a deer that doesn't have anybody in it is not considered to be a deer. And there's not even a gezera. Rabbi Yossi says, well, it may not be a dira, but you do have to worry about the guy coming back on Shabbat, right? Now, I mean, the Jew is not going to drive back on Shabbat, but the goy may drive back on Shabbat, and therefore we have to make a distinction between the Nochri and the Yisrael. So in the case where the house is an unoccupied house for the Shabbos by a Nochri, I mean, who says he's not going to drive back? Mashenken, if it's there for Tzosser by Yisrael, it's Eino Oser, because it's not the Derech of Yisrael to drive back on Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon represents now yet a four sheet. The Rabbi Shimon says, I agree that it's not considered to be a Dira. However, I don't believe that we make this Gezerah that a guy's going to come back. As a matter of fact, even if you're talking about a Jew, I mean, you're talking about Be'ir Acheret, no. I say it could be parked around the corner. He wanted to stay by his daughter who's around the corner. And you don't have to be choshish the guy's going to come back on Shabbos. Because even if it's a bitobo tahir, if it's in the very same city, why would he come back? Eino oser, shekvar yisiyon milibo. Basically, he's moved out of the house for Shabbos. He's thinking of staying with his dear daughter over Shabbos. And why would he come back? Says Rav, that's actually how we paskin. We don't have to paskin that there's a chashash, even if he's not in another city. We certainly don't paskin like Rebbe Meir that an unoccupied dira is considered to be a dira, whether it be ikra din, whether it's exerit or abonon. And we accept even this big kiddush Rebbe Shimon that even if he's right across the street, he's not going to come back because he's got his daughter and he wants to stay with his daughter. But I want to clarify that I'm only talking about a daughter. If you're talking about moving in with your son, then that doesn't count. You may definitely be moving back on Shabbos because you know what people say. The Amri Inshe, when a doggy barks at you, forget it, ignore it, just walk straight into the house. But when a bitch barks at you, leave. And since your daughter-in-law may be among the latter, you might have to leave in the middle of Shabbos because you certainly don't want to suffer. And so there you got to worry. So gnavach baguriata, however, if it's a bitch that's barking, then get out of the way. And now we're ready for our dear Richie. La Capitan? La Talisker? Looks like we have to give him some kind of better title today. How about the Halakha Talisker? Doesn't look good. How about maybe we've got Doc with us this... Ah, nope, still no good. Doc, looks like you're on duty, man. Last minute call. Oh, that was close. You know, everybody's dispensable, even Rebbe's.
Go ahead. Sorry about that, Doc.
He's relieved. Yeah, you definitely made up for the delay there, Richie. Let me tell you, you must have been practicing. So the rest of the parak is dedicated to water issues. And we've started these problems because we had a lot of the discussions right up towards the end over here. We've been talking about what to do with a bor, ben shtei chatzerot, and if you have two rishuyos that are sholeit on a bor with the problems of it. Today, we want to say, okay, what if you actually do have two rishuyos sholeit on a bor? Let's imagine a regular case. You've got a chotzer on one side of a mechitza, a chotzer on another side of the mechitza, and then beneath the mechitza, extending into both sides, both chatzeros, which obviously do not have an eruv between them because they don't have a petach between them, you've got this subterranean cistern that goes under the mechitza, which is accessible from both sides. So the question is, we said before, if two people are drawing from an area, this would be like the area on top of the wall or the area in the ditch. The same thing would be true about the water. And if your two people are being sholeit on a bor, then you've got a problem. Now, your immediate response to that, I'm sure, would be to tell me that why is there a problem if there's a mechitza between the two chatzerot? Then didn't we say that a mechitza tluya is matir b'mayim? And isn't this mechitza going down straight over the cistern? In which case, we should see it as the equivalent of the story that we've been talking about so many times about the porch in Venice, where we've got our refrigerator box. That was a mechitza tluya. So why would we not be able to just use the mechitza between the two chatzeras as our mechitza tluya? Well, there's two issues that are involved, as we're going to see. Actually, there is a shita that says that that's perfectly good mechitza tluya. However, there are other shitas in the Mishnah that agree that it's definitely not a good mechitza tluya. There's two possibilities that are involved here. It's not a good mechitza tluya because it doesn't really extend into the water space. So it's entirely above the cistern. I mean, perhaps if it would go into the cistern and would be a mechitza tluya over the water, you're right. But over here, it's not a mechitza tluya over the water because it sort of ends at the edges of the cistern's top. And then we don't see a mechitza that's affecting the water. That's one issue. The other issue is that it could be that a mechitza tluya for mayim has to actually be primarily made for mayim. Mashenkin over here, this is the standard mechitza of the chatzeres, which is not meant for mayim particularly, and therefore is not filling the requirements of a special mechitza, the kula, that the Rabbanan gave for mechitza over water. So what do we do? So says the Mishnah, well, we've got some different shitot over here. So if you need to be able to separate the area of the bor, which is to the chotzer on the right, from the area of the bor, which is the chotzer to the left, then what you got to do is you got to make a mechitza. Now, it could be that this is a mechitza tuluyah, but the mechitza tuluyah would have to be inside the bor. Now, remember also, please, that besides the issue of mechitza tuluyah that we spoke about, we also had raised earlier the question, remember, we said, oh, my God, if you've got a bor like that, so then you're going to have to make a mechitza shel barzel. Remember, we laughed at that. They have to put up an iron curtain in the middle of that cistern in order to make sure that what we thought it meant literally, you need a mechitza shel barzel because you're going to have to prevent the water from carrying from one to another. In the end, the Gemara says, of course, it doesn't mean that. It means that what you really need is a virtual mechitza shel barzel. In other words, something that is going to show itself as a mechitza. So then what is the issue? One of the issues is the clarity that was separating one chotzer's area from the other. There is an additional possible issue. And the additional possible issue is called in the Gemara arive maya. It means that there is a very egregious mixing of the water, and that we want to avoid. In other words, we need to make some type of basic feeling over here that the water isn't just flowing from one to the other, in which case you are drawing directly from the water of the other chotzer to this chotzer. See, even though obviously we can't really make a watertight kind of seal between the two, but we may need to do more than just have a mechitza tuluyah just anywhere, because what we want to really do is make sure that we've got a mechitza that makes it look like the water isn't just flowing freely between one and the other. So all of this we're going to be taking a look at over here at the different shitot. So let's start, as the Mishnah says, we've got this bor between two chatzerot. The two chatzerot are divided by a real mechitza that goes between them, and it goes above the bor still. Ein mamalim yimenu b'shabbat, you got a big problem, because basically you've got two chatzerot that are sholeit on the same third reshus, when that we've seen again and again over many, many examples, that in that kind of case, whether it's a charitz or whether it's the top of the wall, or all the different cases we had about the churava yesterday and the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel, about tashmish derech avir and what is considered to be mixed. But in this case, it's about as mixed as you could possibly get, right? Because what we're talking about over here is really the two chatzeros come right up to the bor. They're both going to be drawing from the bor. That's our classic example of two chatzeros without an air of making use of a third area. So you can't be mamal and b'shabbos. The only thing you'd be able to do is you need to make a real mechitza of 10 tfachim. It doesn't matter where you make this mechitza. You can make it below, you can make it on top, be milamata, or bein mitoch ogno. You can make it within the extended area around the bor. Again, I'm not sure what we want to call that, the edging of the bor around it. But I still wish I could remember that special word for an area around the well. I just can't think of it. So whether it's inside or whether it's all the way down, it really doesn't make a difference, but it's got to be in the area. Now, the Gemara is going to explain what we mean by down and what we mean by tochog. No, that's not clear. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, now wait a minute. You have oversimplified this situation by making it one shita. The truth is that there are two different shitas. This is Machlokas Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, what you have to do over here. And it's not at all clear that either of those shitas are going to be the way you said it, as we're going to see. So Beit Shammai says you got to put it on the bottom, milamata. Beit Hillel says you got to put it on top, milamala. Now please note that this is extremely opaque, because we have no idea what that means. There's three possibilities over here. One possibility is that we're talking about its position within the siding of the cistern that's above the water level. And that's the only question, that above or below. In which case, we could say the one who says above means you can even put it right inside the top of the cistern, even though it doesn't get anywhere near the water. Maybe just have a 10 tefachim at the top of the cistern. And maybe below means you just need to put it below the area that's jutting out of the cistern, which means it would be just up to the water level, but it wouldn't have to go into the water level. That's one possibility. Above and below might also be referring to the water level per se. Below might mean it's got to be on ground level, and then it's got to go up from the ground in the water. Below might mean it's got to be in the water, but it could be above, rather, it might mean it's on under the water, but it's jutting down from the top of the water to the bottom, in which case would be defining the water level. It may be referring to the actual ground level of the cistern, or it may be referring, as I just explained, or it may be referring to the surface of the water. Above means right above the surface of the water, and below means right below the surface of the water. We've got three possibilities over here, and none of which are very clear from the way that we just said it. So, okay, note that the second of the second possibilities, the first and the third possibilities are the same. Because if we're talking about below, meaning right above the surface of the water, then that would be the same thing as above, meaning right above but below the surface of the water. We'll have to see how that, whether these are two different approaches or not. Anyway, but that's Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. Says Reb Yehuda, what in the heck is this whole discussion? I don't understand. Have we or have we not agreed that a mechitza tuluya is perfectly okay, right? So a mechitza tuluya is perfectly okay. Why is this little wall that you're making inside of the bar, why is that better than this big, heavy wall that you've got going between the two chatzeros? It's 30 feet long. I mean, why do we need another wall? I don't think we need any other wall. We could just use the wall that goes between the chatzeros. Okay, so now let's take a look at the Beit Shammai Beit Hillel jazz, because it was not at all clear what the two shitas in Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel, according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, who was reporting the machlokas, what are those two shitas? So the truth is, we've got a number of possibilities. Omer Rav Huna, when you say lamata, what it means is lamata mamash. Now, let me clarify, this is very misleading, because Rav Huna takes for granted that only the visible area, which is the area above the water, between the top of the water level and the top of the inside of the cistern, however high that goes up, that may extend higher, I don't know. But the point is, you don't have to worry about anything else. And therefore, when he says mamash, he doesn't mean mamash in the water. He means it's got to be at the very bottom of the cistern top, which means it's right near the water. It doesn't go into the water. It's right near the water, but it's like right above it, right? And lamala means lamala mamash. It goes all the way from the top of the bore. What if the water is 30 feet down? The mechitza is nowhere near the water. That's fine, because this is a mechitza tuluya, essentially. It was made particularly for the water. It's inside the bore, and therefore it's good enough. It doesn't have to get anywhere near the water. That would be the way I understand both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. They're both agreeing that the meaning of lamala lamata is relative to the space of the hollow part of the bar, not the water level of the bar. That's lamala, that's lamata. That's what I understand. Rav Yehuda says, no, I think that we're talking about the water level, according to Tosfos, or, according to Rashi, we're talking about the ground level. In other words, according to Rav Yehuda, like Rashi, lamata means lamata min hamayim, which means it's got to be all the way on the bottom of the bar, sticking up. And lamala means lamala min hamayim, and that would mean it needs to be above the water, right near the top of the water. And that would mean that the way that Rav Yehuda understands it is when he says lamala, his lamala is Rav Huna's lamata, right? Because Rav Huna's lamata was it's right at the bottom of the space of the bar, right up to the water. So that seems to be basically the same approach, if that's what we hold. Okay. Now, I mean, as I said, not everybody agrees to that. Many Rishonim hold that, according to Rav Yehuda, what we're talking about is not the bottom of the bar. We're talking about either directly above or directly below the water level. Okay. Now, Omele Rabba Bar Ravuna Labaya, can you please explain to me the logic of what Rav Yehuda is talking about? I mean, he's explaining Aliba de Beit Shammai. Again, this is the way Rashi understands. We're only asking according to this approach. If he is saying that Beit Shammai holds that when it's below, it means it's got to be lamata min hamayim, right? So it's got to be on the either under the water, according to Rashi, on the bottom, the actual bottom of the bore itself, maybe even 30 feet down. Why is it that you couldn't put it lamata mamash? Again, mamash is very misleading. He's using lamata mamash how Rav Huna defined it. That is to say, in the only open space, which is the area above the water of the level, and then lamata mamash would mean right above the water. So why doesn't he like that shot? I'm assuming he doesn't like that shot because you're allowing the water to mix rather egregiously, right? Because you don't even touch the water. So, I mean, and if it's on the bottom, it's on the bottom of the bar. I mean, you don't even see it sticking up. I mean, everything is mixing on top of the mechitza, isn't it? I mean, maybe the bar is 20 feet high and your mechitza is only 10 tefachim high from the bottom. So how does that any better? Lamata minamayim nami. Is it darive maya from above? Omale, yeah. You're right, except that you don't know one very special halacha. Didn't you hear how Rav was quoted by Rav Yehuda or something, Rabbi Chiya, that when Rabbi Yehuda said that, there's a little piece that's missing, that in addition to the question of where you put the 10 tefachim mechitza, you'd need an additional tips of the kanim. And those are the pieces, the vertical pieces of the mechitza, need to be sticking up out of the water at least a tefach. So then that would mean you need to extend it above the water surface so that it should be very clear. That's how Rashi is learning. And that would mean, oh my gosh, I mean, it could be 20 feet high. Tosis understands that no, the whole mechitza was right below the surface, according to Rav Yehuda in Beit Shammai. And what we're talking about, it doesn't have to get to the bottom. We're talking about we need to have it look like anybody who looks in there can see, oh my gosh, look, there must be a mechitza under there because they can see the vertical beams of the mechitza sticking up. Okay, but again, this is a side point. Two different ways of learning how far Rav Yehuda goes, according to Rashi and according to Tosfos. So we deal with the question, obviously, arive maya in reality. And obviously, sticking up the Rosh Kanim, which only are there every three tefachim or whatever, is not going to stop Arive Maya. So the whole idea is we just don't want it to be so obvious. We want to show everybody we are making a real difference between the side A and side B in terms of the Chatzeros. It's all just as the whole idea of Mechitza Tluya B'mayim when it comes to Rishiyas of Shabbos and being Metalta from a Carmel, it's up to your porch. I mean, over there also, it's just virtual. I mean, right? I mean, the water is still flowing in along the canal in Venice, and it doesn't matter. We wish it was on Venus. But you could certainly say, well, I don't understand. Aren't you still drawing the water from the river? Of course you are. But that isn't the point. What we're trying to do is we're trying to make this kalo sheikilo that it becomes a virtual kind of mechitza. It's the same thing as true over here. And to address your problem of, well, what do you achieve by putting it under the water surface? So to address that problem, we're saying, look, there's pieces that are coming up, an additional tefach, and that you didn't take into consideration. Now, Rabbi Baruch Hanan also asked the question, according to Rav Yehuda, he asked in the other direction in Beis Hillel. So he said, and when Rav Yehuda said that I'll leave it a Beis Hillel, it means a malam and a mayim. So then it's above the surface of the water. So then if it's above the surface of the water, what do you care if it's all the way up on the top of the lip? It could be all the way up on the edge of the bar, right? So let's call it that. So what's the difference? Mashallah, malam, mamashallah. I mean, I'm assuming because, wow, the water is just mixing. Yeah. And if it's like at the bottom, but not touching the water, it's not mixing. L'mayim in amami nami, it's still a rive maya. And this time, Abaya said, well, you're missing a very important piece of information. This one was said by Yaakov Karchina, and it was a braita that he quoted. And that is the other direction is also true. That aliba de Beit Hillel, you would have to sink in an additional tefach of kaneh between, and again, it's just these, the vertical beams that are coming out, that are supporting the fence that is hanging. They have to go into the water itself for the same reason. We don't want it to be so egregious. It has to be able to look like it's a mechitza, and the water isn't just freely mixing. So either way, either they're going up or they're going down, but either way, they definitely are visible and penetrating, visible aliba the Rabbi Shammai, and penetrating aliba the Beit Hillel. Now, let me ask you something. It seems to me that if that's Rav Yehuda's approach, then we've got a real contradiction. Because, look, Rav Yehuda, didn't he say, because when it comes to a churva, He said that if you've got buildings in a churva where there's no roof, the roof collapsed, right? So you can take a korah. Now, this is not the same korah that we put on a mavoi. This is a korah of 4 tefachim width, not 1 tefach width, which gives it all kinds of other dinner. So you take a 4 korah width, 4 arba, a 4 tefach width korah, and you put it up across 2 of the broken walls. Then you would be allowed to carry under that korah. So says Rav Yehuda. Rav Nachman, quoting Rabbi Bar Avua, says that actually a korah arba'a is also materet b'mayim. Now let me ask you something. First, let's think about how this works. Rashi understands that this works because he must be paskening like the shita who holds that a mechitza tluya also works on dry land, which we saw is a machlokas. We don't paskin that way because we have the klal kol mechitza shagidim bok imbo is not considered to be a mechitza. And if it's 3 tefachim above the ground level, then gidim or bok imbo. Tosfos says this has nothing, but nothing to do with that question. Why do you think we need the korah of 4 tefachim? What's wrong with the korah of 1 tefach, especially if you hold like before that a korah is mishum mechitza? Because korah is not really mishum mechitza. That's just a special din lagabi mavoi. Over here, we're talking about halacha l'mashmi Sinai. Now, halacha l'mashmi Sinai is called, remember, pi tikra yored v'sotem. If you got the edge of a roof, the edge of a roof closes over the area the size of a roof. Well, in order to be a roof, it's got to cover over a significant mokom. And a significant mokom is always defined as 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. So that means if you have a korah that is 4 tefachim wide, and it's longer than 4 tefachim, it is a roof. In which case, the edges of that korah extend downwards, and they have nothing to do with mechitza teluya, because mechitza teluya is a problem only when you're coming mishum mechitza, not when you're coming mishum pitik of your desotim. So that's how Tosfos understands it. In any event, my question, according to you, is how could Rav Yehuda be saying that a korah is a proper kind of mechitza if you just said that, according to Rav Yehuda, even Beit Hillel needs to have something jutting into the water to prevent the free mixing of the water, right? So if the korah is going to be good enough, materet b'mayim, how do you explain the fact that it's not preventing a mixture of water? Ah, says the Gemara, that's because the korah is 4 tefachim wide. And the chachamim were sure, why is it mixing over here? Because basically, you're going to be lowering your bucket from side A. Side B is going to lower their bucket, right? But the bucket is going to go to the other side freely. So it's going to be taking water from the other side of the chatzer. So why would that work according to Rav Yehuda, who feels that we need to at least make it clear that we're collecting from different sides? That's because a dli does not normally drift that far away. So kim lo d'rabbanan, that ain't dli malech yoter me'arba tefachim. So since it has to be 4 tefachim in order to be a pitikra, it also is 4 tefachim to prevent that mixture. So, but there's still mixture of water. Forget about the bucket, okay? Isn't there mixture of water underneath the korah itself? And aren't you actually putting something directly into the water and here it doesn't touch the water? Ah, yes. But that's the special halacha. Now, Rashi has the word Ella. Ella means you're right. Throw out Rabbi Yehuda's approach. The only way this is going to work is by saying this is a din in Mechitza Tluya, and it's Kalu Shekilu Chachomi B'mayim, and therefore, if it's a Kalu Shekilu Chachomi B'mayim, we do not need for there to be an actual break, a physical break, because we're relying on Mechitza Tluya, in which case, Rav Yehuda's approach is wrong. We don't need to get down to the water. We only need to make it clear that this is being made specially for the water by putting it inside of the bar, which is Rav Huna's pshat. So according to Rashi and according to Rashi's Gears of Ella, we just threw out Rav Yehuda. Now, obviously, not everybody agrees to this. If you don't have the gears of Ella, then there's a big difference, again, between Pitikra Yorid Vesotem and Estam a Mechitza Tuluya. And therefore, what we're saying over here is, no, don't confuse the din of a Mechitza Tuluya with the general din of Kalu Shekilu Bamayim. And Kalu Shekilu Bamayim actually includes even Pitikra Yorid Vesotem, which doesn't get near the water. Masha Enkem by Mechitza Tuluya, Rav Yehuda could be right, and we need it to actually get to the surface of the water, touch the surface of water. One has something to do with the other. Two very different pshatim. One is Gores Ella. One is not Gores Ella. Okay. Gavi's coming in late this morning, and we've missed a lot of the pretty walk. I'm assuming that I can blame the Rebbe for this. I see. Okay. Is the Rebbe not going to be learning the daf with you today? I thought he would get back under some good hashpa over there. Okay. Fine. You'll take care of him later. Anyway, so now we have an interesting raya to this, that we are much more lenient when it comes to a Mechitza Tuluya, which according to Tosfos is very good, because we're talking about a leniency that's going to extend to Pitikra Yorid Vesotem as well. It's not just a repetition of the general din. And we're going to show you that you could actually even be more makel than we thought. What would be the din? Remember how this all started? It all started with this question, right? We've had this again time after time. Is a Mechitza Tuluya Bechurva? No. Ein Mechitza Tuluya Meteret Ela B'mayim Kalu Shekilu Chachamim B'mayim, like we said. Now we're going to go into that in a moment to see how we can even be more makel. But first, let's think about Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, exactly. This is Rabbi Yehuda, not to be confused with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, exactly. Why in the world are we looking to make another Mechitza if we already have this big, beautiful Mechitza Tuluya that is hanging between the two Chatzeros? That's a perfectly good Mechitza that goes right into the Mayim and it's good enough. So Lote Mechitza, the Mechitza between the Chatzeros can't be, the Mechitza in the bar can't be more of a Mechitza than a 30-foot wall that's 10 feet high between the Chatzeros. And in fact, Omar Rabba Barbachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, there's others, other Tanoim who learned this. And because Rabbi Yehuda over here is basically following the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. And remember, Rabbi Yossi Nimuko Imo. And that's the way we would paskin. Because Rabbi Yossi says, a Mechitza Tuluya works even over dry land. And therefore, the Mechitza doesn't have to go into the bor. It works perfectly well for the entire Chotzer, even though you think it's ending at the dry land, which is the edge of the top of the bar. I don't care. That's also good enough. How do I know that? Again, from Sukkah. So when we're talking about Sukkah, so it says over there in the Mishnah, somebody who starts making his walls on top of the Sukkah, and he gets them lower and lower by adding more of these belts around the walls, as long as they're still three tefachim above the ground, they're puzzle. Why? It's not lovud. And it's a Mechitza Shagadim Bokimba. Once they get beneath that, then it's okay. How about if he starts at the bottom of the Sukkah and he starts going upwards? So then, once it gets to 10 Tvachim, that's the same as getting to the Schach. And look at this amazing psak of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, look, a wall going from the bottom up is considered to be a perfectly good wall, even though it doesn't touch the Schach. Same thing is true in the other direction. A wall coming from top down is considered to be a perfectly good wall, even though it doesn't touch the ground. So what do you see according to Rabbi Yossi? That a Mechitza Tuluya is usable even over dry ground. We're talking about a sukkah over there. So apparently, he holds the same thing as Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is saying we can use the Mechitza between the Chatzeros as the Mechitzas over the water, says the Gemara. That's certainly, it ain't necessarily so. Evalohi, actually, Rabbi Yehuda does not have to hold like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi does not have to hold of Rabbi Yehuda. Two different issues, for God's sake. Remember, one of these is a D'oraisa, and one of these is a D'rabbanan. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't necessarily hold like Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yehuda, he was only ready to say, I'm ready to accept that Mechitza Tluya in the case of the Chatzeras for Erevin. Erevin is a Derabbanan. What does that mean? That he would have said the same thing on a D'oraisa, where we're talking about making a Sukkah kosher mid-D'oraisa? Absolutely not. Sukkah D'oraisa low. And I would say the other way around also. What makes you think that Rabbi Yossi would agree with Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yossi, and this is a fascinating thing, Rabbi Yossi was referring to the dinim of a sukkah, and the dinim of a sukkah are not as chomor as the dinim of Shabbos, right? Forget about whether it's a D'oraisa drabonon on Shabbos. But a sukkah is an iser aseh. If you end up eating outside of your sukkah, and your sukkah wall is no good, okay, so you were over on the iser of aseh, of shivas yomim, you're supposed to be a sukkah stage for shivas yomim, you were over on that. If you would be counting as a mechitza, a non-mechitza for Shabbos, you could be chayev skila, right? So you'll say, yeah, okay, but this is all an imaginary derabbanan. It doesn't matter, because once the rabbanan are attacking something, koma de tikun rabbanan ke'en diraisa tikun. The rabbanan give all of their dinim the same general attributes as the diraisa. In which case, Rabbi Yossi may well say, look, I'm not ready to go out on a limb and say that you can use a mechitza tluya, literally out on a limb, is good enough for Shabbos. Because Shabbos, you're talking about something which is fundamentally an iser d'oraisa. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi would say by an iser aseh, Shabbos, which is an iser skila, not just an iser d'oraisa, I mean, but an iser skila, not. Now, I know what you're going to ask me. The famous story of the Sefer Torah in Tzipori. Everybody knows the famous story of the Sefer Torah in Tzipori. And we know that Rabbi Yossi was the Rav of Tzipori. And therefore, that famous story must have been a psak of Rabbi Yossi. And that famous story allowed a mechitza tluya on Shabbos over the ground. It must be that Rabbi Yossi did agree with Rabbi Yehuda. Let me tell you what the story was, okay? But before we get to the story, I want to explain that not necessarily was up here Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi may have already died at the time of that story, and this is only going perhaps the psak of his son, who was Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Maybe Rabbi Yossi himself never went that far to be Mater Mechitza Tuliyah, like we're saying right now. But anyway, let me tell you what the story was. Okay, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said one time they forgot to bring out the Sefer Torah to the shul, and they hadn't made an Erev between the house and the shul, and it was a chotzer that needed an Erev. So how were they going to get it? So what they did is they spread out these sheets on a clothing line, and they made these sheets go all the way to the door of the Beit HaKnesset, forming between two clothing lines, forming a hall. And that was its own separate rishos that the chotzer on either side could not go into. And because of that, they were able to carry the Sefer Torah directly through a private hall into the Beit HaKnesset. Now, over there, the sheets certainly didn't get all the way to the ground. They would have been filthy. And they considered it to be okay. Wait a minute. They spread sheets on Shabbos? How you spread sheets on Shabbos? I mean, I understand. We had a machlokas before, the question about the pkaka halon. Remember, can you add a pkaka halon? Can you not add a pkaka halon? That was a question whether you could be mosif on an ol haroi for Shabbos. Nobody said you could put up the pkaka halon if it's all the wall that was. You can't start a wall on Shabbos. So what do you mean they spread out sheets on Shabbos? Nobody's matter that. Okay. They didn't spread out the sheets. We just didn't want to tell you that the woman in the chutzner didn't bother taking the sheets down before Shabbos, and they still had their laundry hanging. That's pretty embarrassing, so we said they spread sheets. But Lamaisa, what happened was that the sheets were hanging there from before Shabbos, and they found the sheets on the laundry lines. So they said, okay, so then between the two laundry lines, we would be allowed to carry between the amudim, and therefore between these spread sheets, we'll just carry in one XL column. And if you say for Torah, Vakarulo, and they read from that Sefer Torah. It had nothing to do with this. Okay. Now, there's another story over here, and that is not, again, maybe not like Rabbi Yossi, but we do have another shita that holds this is okay, and that's Rabbi Yehuda, that we're trying to say, holds the same thing as Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya. Maybe not like Rabbi Yossi. And what is that? Okay, we just said Rabbi Yehuda was matir using the mechitza of the chotzer over the bor. But Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya says something similar. And what he says is quite amazing. I'm going to explain it to you before, because it's really very simple. It just sounds complicated. Now, here's the deal. We were talking about refrigerator boxes that you're dropping down in Venice in order to be able to draw from the canal through the virtual wall of the extended refrigerator box, right? Amazingly, Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya says you're also, besides the kula of Mechitza Tluya of the refrigerator box, you can also use a virtual refrigerator box in which there is no box. Oh my gosh. How do you do that? It's really very simple. Let's imagine that you've got a large porch hanging over the canal in Venice, right? Now, if it's large enough, and when I say large enough, all you need is 4 amas by 4 amas. 4 amas by 4 amas multiplied by 6 tvachim is 24 by 24 tvachim, right? Now, here's what you do. You make your hole to draw up the water 4 by 4 tvachim right in the middle of the porch, right? Then you take your magic marker and you draw a line of 10 tvachim by 4 tvachim to the north, 10 tvachim by 4 tvachim to the south, 10 tvachim by 4 tvachim to the east, 10 tvachim and 4 tvachim to the west, giving you a total number of tvachim, including the hole in the bar, 24. 10, 4, 10, 10, 4, 10. And now you virtually fold over the parts of the top of the porch around the hole. So now you've got a refrigerator box of 10 tvachim high by 4 tvachim wide all around the hole. Now you may not see it, but that's because you lack imagination. You're much too literal. Refrigerator boxes are virtual refrigerator boxes. And this is called kof. Kof, not with a kof like for monkeys, because monkeys don't have that kind of imagination. Kof with a chof, which means you're allowed to bend things down virtually, and it's a new extension. So that would mean that if, according to Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya, you could have your refrigerator box, and even a virtual refrigerator box would allow you to draw that water, then that would be the same thing that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, right? That you're allowed to use it to draw the water. And of course, the Gemara explains that there's no connection between these two. I mean, come on. Rabbi Yehuda was talking about a real mechitza, not a virtual mechitza. That's a kof mechitza. What makes you think that Rabbi Yehuda would go down? He says, God achit mechitzata. That's it. Halach l'mash mi-Sinai. Mechitzot continue going down. Fine. What does that have to do with kof? Do you see him saying kof? Maybe he doesn't hold of kof, and he would never go so far as to say you could go and make a virtual refrigerator box. And when it comes to Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya, I don't see what makes you think he would agree with Rabbi Yehuda. You're forgetting what the situation was over there. It was not Venice. It was the Yam HaKinneret. Now, the Yam HaKinneret is different than a normal area over water. You know why? Because there are so many little areas built around the Yam HaKinneret, between Tveria itself, Kfar Nachum, and all of these other little towns that built up around it. Then you've got all these beaches. Now, all of these beaches have these little walls, right? So basically, all around the Yam HaKinneret, you have a mechitza of 10 tvachim. So you'll tell me, okay, but I mean, it's bigger than Beit Satayim, and it's a karfaf shelo kafla dira. You certainly can't live in the Yam HaKinneret, right? Okay, that's true. But are we really going to say, now this is a new idea we never had before, we always took for granted that we give the din of a karfaf shelo kafla dira, we give it the same din as a Carmelite. Now we do, it's true, in practical terms, that you can't carry outside of Arba Amos, and we're not going to allow you to carry for Bishus HaYochid. Yes, 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 yes. But is it exactly the same? No. There may be a difference between the type of carmelit that we're assigning the din of karfav shloh hukaf ladira to, where it is hukaf, versus a yam, which is not hukaf at all. And therefore, it's possible the Rabbi Hananya ben Akavir was being makel with his whole story over here, because this was not really an open yam. It was an enclosed yam, and therefore it has the same thing as karfav shloh hukaf ladira. So all the yeshlo ognim v'ayarot v'karfifot, and it said everything around the yam akiner. But maybe shar meimot, just water stam, would not be acceptable in these circumstances. So therefore, I don't see any relationship between Rav Hanani ben Akavya and Rabbi Yehuda. They might totally ignore each other's psak. Now, once we're already on this very interesting way of creating virtual mechitzas with kofing, let me point out to you that you could even get away with a heck of a lot of a smaller porch than the big 24 by 24 tefach porch that Rav Hananya ben Akavya was talking about. I mean, imagine a porch like this, okay? The porch is right up against your wall, and the hole is right up against your wall, okay? Now, the wall of your building, so your porch has got a little hole in it, right? Right by the door where you want to start lifting up the water. The edge of the wall of your building is definitely good enough to be one wall of the water. I mean, it goes literally into the water. So that wall is fine, correct? Now, if you... sorry. If in addition to that wall, let us imagine that you also have enough space on either side that you could just bend down on either side. So then you should be okay. And if that's the case, let me explain to you all that you need. You need to have a board that is only 4 amos long, but it only needs to be a little bit over 11 tefachim wide in order for it to work. And the reason that that's true is because it's all very nice that you would have to bend it down in one direction. But remember that if you take the 4 tefachim in front of your house, that's only 10 of those would need to be bent down, right? And then you would have on the side of your house, all you would need to bend would be an additional, if you have one, remember, you've got a little bit less than 3 tefachim. Next to your house, you cut out a little bit more than 1 tefach along the length of 4 tefachim. So then that means right by the door of your house, you now have a hole of 4 by 4. On one side of this hole, you have the wall of your house going down into the water. On the other side of the hole, the far side of the hole, you need 10 tefachim. Bend down the 10 tefachim virtually, okay? That means you need 10 tefachim to virtually bend down, plus you need a little bit more than 1 tefach on every side, which is going to be lovud to the wall of your house, right? That's all you need. So then that means you need 10 tefachim on one side, 10 tefachim on the other side, and 4 tefachim in the middle. That's 24 tefachim, but that's only in that direction, which is parallel to the door of your home. But how about to the side? To the side, you extending towards that parallel, you only need 11 and a little bit more. Because once I'm able to bend down, now what we're doing over here is a little bit of a puzzle. Try to imagine the piece of paper, okay? I don't know if somebody have a picture that maybe would help people, but just try to imagine. You take a piece of paper, which is 11 tefachim plus wide, and you stick it up within 3 tefachim of the building, which is your house. And that is your mirpeset floor, okay? Now, in your mind, bend down the piece of paper first so that it's right across the wall of your house. How much space do you need? 4 tefachim. Well, don't bend the whole thing down. Bend 10 tefachim of it down, because that's all you need. But you say, I only have a little bit less than 3 tefachim in the hole. Correct. Take a pair of scissors and cut 1 additional tefach plus a little bit more up against that hole. Now you have a hole of 4 tefachim, right? along a length of four tefachim. Now, when you bend down the piece of paper, bend the sides towards the house. How wide are the sides? A little bit more than one tefach. That's the one tefach that you didn't cut out with the scissors, right? So when you bend in the one tefach plus, you're now within a shoot of less than lava to the wall of your house. So you manage to create a kof, beautiful, entire mechitza, and only one direction needed to be 24 amot, which is absolutely marvelous. I don't see why Gavi is allowing all those cars to get in the way, but okay. So what we've got, therefore, is an even easier situation than Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya spoke about. And I can give you another case, because what you could do is you could take a board and you could have it facing up. So then if the board was facing up, it would even be easier. Instead of putting it down along the length of your mirpeset, I mean, obviously, you've got something sticking out over here from your door, right? So you can either put the board over those beams sticking out, or you could attach the board and have it going vertically. So let's say if you had the board standing vertically, if it's pointing down and you keep it out a distance of four tefachim, so now you've got 10 tefachim of board that are going straight down, and then all you need is enough board to be able to virtually bend inwards so that they cover the edges, only one tefach plus, because it only has to be within lavud of the sides. And then you are in luck. Wow. And you've got yourself a whole beautiful bar, and it's completely surrounded. So I taskufa. All you need is it for it to be 10 tefachim high. It needs to be 6 tefachim plus a little bit. Why 6 tefachim plus a little bit in its width? Because one tefach you're going to be bending in plus a mashu. The other tefach you're going to be bending in on the other end plus a mashu. That's 2 tefachim plus 2 mashus. And you're going to need 4 tefachim in the middle in order for you to have the space of the hole. And that covers the whole thing. Is this clear, everybody? Does somebody have a picture just to make it 100% easy for people? So, I mean, I could take a piece of paper and actually illustrate it if you wish. Do you have something? I'm not catching it particularly. I think it'll be easier to take a piece of paper and try to illustrate it with a piece of paper. So now if we, I can't figure out what that is even. I'm sorry. I can't figure it out. I guess it's not clear enough in the small picture. Look, imagine that my mouth is the door to the house, okay? What you want to do over here is you want to have a place that you can get water into my mouth, right? Now let's assume I do have a big mouth. Let's assume it's four tefachim wide, okay? So then along the four tefachim wide, I need to cut out this piece of paper because it needs also to be four tefachim in, right? But it doesn't need the whole four tefachim in because it could rely on lavud. So it only needs to be within one tefach and a mashu, and now we already have a four tefachim gap right over here, right? Then the first case that we talked about was, okay, now virtually bend down this side, virtually bend down this side, and then they extend inwards, as you can see, on either side of the hole, and they get within three tefachim of my mouth. So then that means that they are already covering the mechitza to the side and the mechitza to the other side. Then bend down the outside, and then that closes the whole thing and forms a shoot. Again, if I really would have to bend it down, so then I would have to cut, but I don't have to cut because this is all kof. But basically what I'm doing is this. I am virtually creating this mechitza, which is within one tefach. It's only one tefach long over here, but that makes it four tefachim with lavud. And therefore, I've got a very easy situation of simply using a small board to make a virtual shoot of four tefachim by 10 tefachim, because I can include my mouth on one end, which is the side of the building. The other case was talking about, that the board is extending upwards. If the board is extending upwards, then it's got its full 10 tefachim this way. So all I need to do is to bring it close enough so that it's going to allow an area of 4 tefachim here, right? That can be done by bending in the sides on either side, virtually. So now they are a little bit more than 1 tefach. If they're a little bit more than 1 tefach, if I put them over here, I have formed within 3 tefachim of my mouth, I have formed a lovet of 4 tefachim across 4 tefachim, across 4 tefachim, and then they went all the way down to the bottom along the length of the building, which is my face and chest. And therefore, I need nothing but this long length. Yes, I do need that. And then I just need that going across 4. And then I need only 1 tefach plus. So that's 4 here, 1 here, 1 here is 6. Plus a little bit more so I can get within 3 tefachim, and that gives me 4 by 4 by 4 by 10 long. Even though it only gets within 3 tefachim in the wall, it's still considered to be legally a completely enclosed shoot. So this would be a combination of the din of kof, the din of mechitza tluya, and the din of lovut. And using all of those three, says Rav Hanani ben Akavya, you just got away with murder, and you made yourself a refrigerator box out of nothing. So wait a minute, says the Gemara. So if it's that simple, so Elohad Tanya, why did we say in the Braita that according to Rav Hanania ben Akavya, the only way to be matir that porch was by something that would be 4 whole amos by 4 whole amos? Why do you need that? Where would that be true? Hechemesh kachasla. That's only if you made a hole in the middle. So then you're basically trying to make a refrigerator box, which is an asuta. An asuta is like a mortar. And that's it. You're going down into the refrigerator box. That's true. If you want to form a refrigerator box around all sides and you don't want to use the area right next to your door as the hole that you're lifting through the water, which might be a good idea since you'd be losing a few kids every week going down the hole. So then you might want to put it in the middle of your gezustra. And that's what Rabbi Hananya ben Akavi was talking about. We're just talking about the theory. Okay, Rabotai. So we've dealt with a lot of tremendous chidushim that incorporated even in yonim of Pitikra Yorid Visosem, this new concept, which we had discussed earlier, but not in such detail, of Kof, the question of where we say Mechitza Tluya is Materet. Might Mechitza Tluya be Materet even in areas other than Mayim, like by Sukkah? And what would be the din of carrying in a chutzah that has got the clotheslines between it, plus a lot of other wonderful questions of the Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as to where a mechitza tluya might be effective if it's over a cistern or in a cistern or below the water level of the cistern. All very excited part of today's daf. The rest of the perek is dedicated to water issues and getting water into your house from a chutzah with Erev problems on Shabbos.